A threat for flooding and strong winds means we're declaring a new WRAL weather alert day. When this tropical storm will hit North Carolina and when we're in the clear.
Then the new state budget with teacher raises and tax cuts is one step closer than ever to being a done deal. Why Governor Cooper is calling it a bad budget in many ways. Then a public comment performance.
You are important to me.
See the unusual minute-long song from a mayoral candidate at today's packed Durham City Council meeting.
But right now here at 7 o'clock, we are taking a look at the newest track for a system that's expected to make landfall along our coast. It will likely strengthen into a tropical storm, and that could happen at any moment. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dan Haggerty.
And I'm Ashley Rowe. Taking a live look here at Carolina Beach. Tomorrow, the community will begin seeing heavy rain and strong wind gusts, and so will the Triangle.
And meteorologist Kat Campbell in the WRL Severe Weather Center tracking all of this for us. And Kat, tell us what the impacts might be that we can expect here.
Well, let's talk about those. We could see some 1 to 3 inch rainfall totals leading to localized flooding and winds gusting up to 40 miles per hour. And that's here in our viewing area. The timing of this is 7 p.m. tomorrow through 3 p.m. Saturday, and that's the timing of our WRAL weather alert day. Let's take a closer look at the system. It's likely to become Tropical Storm Ophelia soon. We're waiting on a low-level center of circulation to form. Once that happens, we expect to get an update and a name from the National Hurricane Center. The official forecast track carries a tropical storm to the north with landfall, top winds 60 miles per hour as we get into early Saturday morning, and we're likely to see what's left of Ophelia curve right along the mid-Atlantic and northeast coasts, bringing heavy rain to those areas as well for the weekend. But zooming in on the forecast track, for the early part of Saturday, we're likely to see a tropical storm pass through the coastal plain. We did see this track shift west a little bit with a new update at 5 o'clock, and that follows what the model plots have shown us this afternoon with a slight trend toward the west into the coastal plain east of I-95. Tropical storm warnings in effect for the North Carolina coast, where they're likely to see some winds gusting to around 60 miles per hour. We are going to have to watch. Any further shift west may mean that the eastern part of our viewing area could be considered to be added to the tropical storm warning. But we haven't seen that yet. So let's take a look at futurecast and the timing. 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, there could be some rain already at the coast. I think that we'll begin to really see the rain ramping up after 2 o'clock tomorrow. More widespread as we get toward the evening commute and dinner time. Still, the heavier rain not here yet. That arrives late tomorrow night with some of the heaviest rain falling into Saturday morning. It's going to be a mess when you wake up Saturday morning. We expect to see strong winds Saturday morning passing through, along with this heavy rain that lasts through about lunchtime. Still, scattered showers stick around even into the afternoon. I'll have a closer look at the town-by-town totals for rain and wind potential coming up.
Sounds good. Thanks, Kat.
Breaking in the last hour or so, the state Senate passed a new $30 billion budget. That means it passed key votes in both chambers today and could be sitting on the governor's desk by this time tomorrow. The bill includes teacher raises, tax cuts, and would trigger Medicaid expansion, providing health insurance to 500,000 North Carolinians. Taking a live look now at the state legislative building, the House is scheduled to vote a second vote shortly after midnight tonight. WRAL's Aaron Thomas is there live. Aaron, this is expected to be a long night for lawmakers.
Yeah, Ashley, you just said it best. A lot of those votes are expected to come in right after midnight. So we're talking about a long night here at the General Assembly. All of this is following months of intense negotiations for several months. And keep in mind that our state has gone more than 80 days without an operating state budget. Let's get you caught up to speed here. So you have GOP lawmakers who actually defended this budget for balancing tax cuts with moderate raises for state employees, additional health care funding, millions added to savings, and billions spent on construction and infrastructure projects. Now, today we spoke with Governor Roy Cooper during an event in Sanford promoting a workforce development program. He commended this budget for potentially getting health insurance to more than 600,000 North Carolinians and ensuring rural hospitals have proper funding. But in his words, he called it, quote, a bad budget in many ways.
It grossly underfunds public education. It provides tax cuts for the very wealthiest among us. It provides private school vouchers, which will end up hurting public education.
So if this particular budget goes through the proper chambers and hits Governor Cooper's desk, he has several options he could take. He can either sign it into law, he can veto it, or he can take no action for the next 10 days and it automatically becomes law. He has not given a specific answer on which direction he wants to go. Of course, we're going to be following this on our late news to see this budget a vote in action and also follow the impacts for other North Carolinians in our area. Ashley?
All right. Aaron Thomas, live at the Legislative Building in downtown Raleigh. Thank you.
Some new information tonight after an off-duty Dunn police officer was shot at a Cumberland County gas station. Deputies say late Tuesday, Officer Joshua Elliott witnessed a domestic dispute while off-duty at the Handy Hugo's there on Ramsey Street. He says he saw Daniel Locklear assaulting a woman and then tried to intervene. Locklear then pulled out a handgun and started firing as he ran away, and Elliott shot back. Both of them were hit in the shootout. Locklear has serious injuries and will face a long list of charges, including attempted murder, assault, and kidnapping charges. Officer Elliott is out of the hospital. A Durham man charged in a deadly double shooting at North Carolina Central University was found not guilty. Desmond Harper was facing two counts of first-degree murder in this case. A jury found him not guilty on both. Shamori Brown and Tavis Rhodes, rather, died in the shooting on NCCU's campus back in 2021, sending thousands into lockdown at a nearby football game. Harper is also one of three men facing murder charges in a Raleigh shooting, which happened just weeks before the one at NCCU.
Today, dozens of Durham City employees rallied for more pay, taking their demands once again to City Hall. The city manager is proposing bonuses ranging from $1,000 to $3,000 based on each worker's annual salary. WRAL's Monica Casey takes us inside another contentious meeting that was at a moment of levity.
City Council's hours-long discussion about these bonuses was punctuated with outbursts from the crowd and personal attacks on each other. They agreed to spend $6.5 million total on these bonuses, but they're still working out how much each individual employee will get.
It is his will that every need.
A bright spot in an otherwise tense meeting.
You give me I thank you, Dr. Hyman, and you're doing ABC, and then you come back with a dig, and I'm tired of it.
Councilmember Hyman, I was directly called out.
Wait a minute.
I was directly called out.
Presiding.
I was directly called out, Madam Mayor. I would like a response to respond.
No, you will not at this time.
Mayoral candidate Charlita Burris worked to lighten the mood with song.
You're all a part of God's body. Stand with me.
We just want to be compensated and treated fair.
Chris Benjamin has been one of the sanitation workers leading the charge for more pay.
This is the fourth most dangerous job in the country. We put our lives out there every day.
Those workers are asking for higher pay and bonuses of $5,000. Community members came out to support them.
The bonuses should be given to those making $40,000 to $75,000, who showed up to do their jobs in person, even through the pandemic, who are working multiple jobs.
The city manager's proposal offered bonuses between $1,000 and $3,000 depending on salary. City councilors have asked staff to rework those numbers for larger bonuses for lower paid employees and smaller bonuses for those at the higher end of the pay scale. In Durham, Monica Casey, WRAL News.
A North Carolina family is suing Google Maps after a man drove off a collapsed bridge while following the app's directions. Philip Paxton died last September when his car fell into a creek and he drowned. His family is suing now for negligence, saying he plunged off that collapsed bridge because Google's Maps, the system never updated that the bridge wasn't repaired. According to the lawsuit, people had informed Google Maps of the collapse prior to Paxton's death. Google is reviewing the lawsuit.
Bryce Young might miss the third game of his NFL career. Just ahead, the player expected to take his place as the Panthers hope to get the first win of the regular season. Plus, thousands of people who spent their Labor Day weekend in the air are part of a new record set at RDU Airport.
All right, welcome back. I'm Dan Haggerty. This is In Depth. Let's get to an in-depth that I promised over a week ago. And I would like to start with a statement. I believe in being authentic. It's important to me. I hope that comes across. I'd much rather someone tell me the truth than sugarcoat stuff. Take Alex, for instance. He emailed me recently and said, Dan, you're probably a nice guy, but I simply can't stomach listening to you discuss a topic. I truly find you annoying. So, I actually find that refreshing. I mean, in a painfully frigid ice bath sort of way, but refreshing. I know exactly where Alex is coming from, and not everyone gives us that courtesy. Which brings me to the fight for Tez Walker. He is the wide receiver at UNC who got benched by the NCAA after transferring too many times. Now, bear with me here for a minute. I want to go through some of the details. I want us all on the same page. I want to give you the timeline. Here it is. In 2020, Walker graduates high school in Charlotte, signs with East Tennessee State, but deferred after a knee injury and never played. Then he committed to NC Central, but the season got canceled because of COVID. And again, he never played a game. So he transferred, this time to Kent State, where he played for two seasons before transferring yet again to UNC, where he is now. Now, the NCAA looked at this timeline and said, okay, you have to sit out a year. Then, applying this new rule that says a student can't play at more than two schools without sitting out a season, a rule that I have to mention wasn't actually made final until after Walker transferred. That had some people confused. Well, why wasn't he grandfathered in, right? The rule came after. Also, the NCAA is counting NC Central as a team where he played, but if you think about it, he never really played, did he? The season was canceled because of a global pandemic, so should that really count? Lots of people say, no way, it shouldn't, like head coach Mack Brown, who responded with shame on you in all caps to the NCAA. He said in a statement, how dare they ever speak about mental health and student athlete welfare again? Then things got even worse when the NCAA responded to Brown and said, hey, cool off, man, because we are getting threats of violence against the board. It was getting kind of scary for a moment. The story was everywhere. It was all over social media and radio shows, Sports Illustrated, all the major networks. Everyone was talking about it. You couldn't miss it. And now we're about 3 weeks into this saga, and I have one question for you. What is Tez Walker's major? You know what I mean? Like, what's he studying in all of these schools that he's going to? I'm serious, I can't find it. Even on the team website, I pulled it up, nothing. You'd think it would be part of each and every single story, considering how we're always told that these kids are student athletes, not the other way around. Do you know why the NCAA changed that transfer rule in the first place? To protect students, something they've always been criticized for ignoring. It's so kids don't switch schools every single year to play with a new team who now has the best new quarterback. To keep other programs from poaching players from school to school. To keep summer break from looking like NFL free agency. To keep kids from putting football ahead of everything else. And Mack Brown was one of its biggest supporters. In April, he applauded the new rule, saying, the other thing they've done with the transfer portal, which I think is good, is they've said that you can't transfer twice, undergraduate, without getting a waiver. And while Tez Walker has only played football at one school, he's enrolled at four schools. And he's only a junior. New books, new teachers, new classes. That's not really how college is supposed to work. If education was truly the top priority, like we're always told it is, wouldn't that play into the conversation about mental health? But it hasn't. Not from Brown, not from UNC, not from the media, not from fans, nowhere. I hear you, too. Look. When you listen to Brown's points, the timing of the transfers, the hypocrisy with the NCAA, he makes some compelling arguments, but you either believe in the ethics of the rule or not. There's no effective date for virtue. Now, this probably sounds like I have an opinion on Walker's eligibility, but I don't. Play, don't play, that's not what I'm talking about. I just don't like lip service. I don't like feeling as though I might be getting manipulated. The New York Times published an opinion piece this morning with this awesome graphic of this Mr. Peanut-looking football guy who I love. It was written by an inside man, a regent at the University of Michigan, who called the current model for college sports a money grab and a shameful time for all of us involved in college athletics and higher education. He wrote this About some of the new super conferences that are coming up. The current ACC expansion as well, where the Atlantic Coast Conference ironically added schools that are literally on the Pacific Coast, purely to make money from TV deals worth billions. Here on the screen, this is how he broke down what this means for kids who have to travel now across the country to play these sports. College football teams, he says, get chartered planes and nice hotels. But the Olympic sports, like field hockey, track and field, crew, which most athletes play, flying commercial is the norm. For a University of Michigan team to travel to a game at the University of Oregon, for example, requires over 7.5 hours of travel on Delta Airlines with a layover in Salt Lake City or Seattle. That's longer than a flight from Detroit to London. And he's not even mentioning the time changes. These are kids in school, most of them paying full tuition. And because we want to see UNC play Stanford on ESPN, the lacrosse team has to travel across the continent, which again is fine if the man who orchestrated this entire move didn't say this a few weeks earlier.
There's a need to reaffirm that the student-institution relationship is just that. Our athletes are students, not employees.
Look, I'm not breaking any news here. Common sense broke this story years ago, but we do need to be honest with the path we're headed down when it comes to college sports, especially in this town. I guess the moral is, be like Alex, our honest viewer, who probably turned this segment off the moment I started talking. Unless I'm growing on him, Alex. That happens sometimes, I grow on people. This is such a big topic, all right? I have a lot more to get into. I never even mentioned NIL. Tell me what you think. Email me at dan@wrl.com. Tell me what is on your mind, and we'll go in depth.
Dan, after hearing you talk, all I can say is this is a football country with a money problem. Mm-hmm. That's all I got. Speaking of football, Panthers quarterback Bryce Young is not expected to play Sunday against the Seahawks after suffering an ankle injury. Today, the rookie QB missed a second straight day of practice. Young was hurt during Monday's loss against the Saints, though he played the entire game. Andy Dalton set to start in place of Young. The Panthers are still searching for their first win of the season. Let's take a look now at Carolina Beach, where tomorrow things are going to look a whole lot different as a wind and some rain starts moving its way through. Meteorologist Kat Campbell tracking it all.
And we're waiting. You know, any hour now we could get that update from the National Hurricane Center that Tropical Storm Ophelia has formed. We expect that to happen tonight. And that's what the official forecast track calls for as well. We really have the system beginning to organize. And this is what will be impacting North Carolina this weekend, the center of circulation in that general vicinity right there. So let's talk winds. Because this system is really starting to come together, we have stronger winds in the forecast. And tomorrow, the sustained winds by the evening should be around 20 miles per hour. Early in the day, we've got about a 20 to 25 mile per hour wind gust forecast. So as we get to the afternoon, the winds could begin to gust to about 30 miles per hour. And then during the evening, that's when we've got those 35 mile an hour wind gusts. The strongest winds will be tomorrow night and the last through about 11 a.m. likely on Saturday morning. So if we look at how strong those winds could get town by town, west of Raleigh and Fayetteville, so for Durham, much of Chatham County over into the Sandhills, 30 to 35 miles per hour. From Raleigh, Fayetteville points east, it's going to be that 35 to 40 mile an hour range. Coastal Plain could see some localized gusts here in red, Greenville, and that includes our southern coast up to about 50 miles per hour. But the eastern part of our state, easternmost part, should be between 50 and 60 miles per hour. The Outer Banks could even see some gusts higher than 60 miles per hour. So the power outage potential, really barely any potential through lunchtime on Friday, which is tomorrow now, believe it or not. As we get into Saturday, I think that's when we have a better chance of some scattered power outages, especially along the Outer Banks and in that general area. For us here locally, it's a fairly low in risk, but I do think that we could see some isolated outages certainly this weekend. As for how much rain could fall, we've got a big, what we call gradient from west to east. So you go from half an inch in blue all the way to 5 inches in orange in a pretty short distance across our state. About 1 to 2 inches for Raleigh and Fayetteville. East of there, it's 2 to 3 inches. And then here's our bullseye in orange, where we could see those 3 to 5 inch totals with some localized totals up to 6 inches. A lot to talk about. We've got the wind, we've got the rain, but let's talk about the severe weather threat tomorrow. This is not not one of our main concerns, and this would come tomorrow night into Saturday morning. And from what I've seen, really more Saturday morning, there is the potential for some rotation at the coast, as we often see with these tropical systems. The area in yellow, that's our primary concern. We can't rule it out under this level one risk here east of Raleigh. However, it's not our main concern. We'll keep an eye on the radar for you in the forecast and let you know if our thoughts change there. But with these tropical systems, we always can't rule out some rotating storms. A WRAL weather alert day from 7 p.m. tomorrow through 3 p.m. Saturday. That's going to be the worst of this weather. Once we get past Saturday afternoon, we'll begin to see some improvements. It'll be gradual. Sunday still mostly cloudy, 75 the high, and we've got some quieter weather potentially early next week.
There are so many events that are scheduled for this weekend. I know a lot of people are not happy about the rain on Saturday. Thanks, Kat.
Believe it or not, it's almost hockey season. The Canes are back at PNC getting ready for a new shot at the Stanley Cup. What we can expect this year.
Today, the Canes hit the ice for the start of training camp.
Exciting. Carolina coming off a trip to the Eastern Conference Finals. Coach Rod Brind'Amour back at the helm after his fifth straight playoff appearance. The team signed Sebastian Aho to a contract extension over the summer, as well as Captain Jordan Staal. They also added several players from free agency, defensiveman Dmitry Orlov. And look, they got the culture and the chemistry. All they need now is that Stanley Cup. Let's do it. Let's take a live look at RDU. A record number of people traveled through this airport over Labor Day weekend.
How about this? RDU set a single day record for passenger traffic. More than 56,100 people flew through the airport on Friday, September 1st. That's the busiest day on record at RDU, according to the TSA.
Nice.
And speaking of RDU, big day there for a local coffee shop.
Durham's BU Cafe just opened up a new location. It's right in Terminal 2. BU Cafe is known for its great tasting and locally roasted coffee. It's also a centerpiece for live music events. The shop celebrated the new location with a ribbon cutting. You'll find it right before security in Terminal 2. I love when there's more options in the terminal. Good stuff.
I will be taking advantage of that for sure.
Hey, thanks for joining us tonight, making WRAL your choice for local news.
Our next newscast is at 10 on Fox 50 and 11 on WRAL. Have a great night.
Keep watching WRAL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.